interconnections and relationships, giving and receiving, the sharing of ideas, and the celebration of the common good. These are the hallmarks of our community, and they radiate like ripples in a pond to touch all who find the uniqueness and quirkiness of our beloved town enough of an attraction to come and live and become engaged here. Port Townsend's very first connectivity fair, hosted by over 70 local community groups, was an invitation to the public to explore the interconnections that surround us. This is part one of a stimulating and revealing discussion from that day among 13 organizations that focus on community building and affordable housing. KPTZ is pleased to present part one of a two-part series that continues our station's commitment to explore housing solutions for all. And now, let's join the discussion.
To begin with, I wanted to just say that last June 29th, we had a conversation, and most of these players were present at that event, which was under the tent along San Juan. And we had 14 organizations there. Some of them today are new, and some of the ones that were there are missing. But the whole point of that one was for the housing organizations locally to basically say what they do to the community, and that's all we did. I mean, there was a tabling effort after that, but we didn't have a conversation amongst groups. And so when Jamie and I talked about hosting this, we wanted to take the next step. And the next step is, let's interact. Let's get connected between the various housing initiatives that are present in our county. So that's what we're doing today. I'm Judy Alexander, and I am active right now within Community Build, a community engagement person for Community Build. So I staged this whole big fair to get here so everybody would go and visit the Community Build table, which is right inside the door. So Jamie and I agreed that what we wanted this day's conversation to be about was how do we connect and collaborate and cooperate between organizations. So Jamie and I thought we'd kick this off with three examples, and she's going to give the first one.
And my name's Jamie Maciejewski. It is really a joy to be here with all of you who are doing housing in this community. Many of you, your organizations weren't doing housing even a short time ago. And I feel like the momentum has been something. It has been increasing. So we're going to hear about that, and we're going to just have an opportunity to do some round robin. When Judy and I met, we made a list of the collaborations that we could think of that have happened. So we're going to call out three collaborations as we get started, but they are just examples because there's a lot more collaborations. And the first one we wanted to call out, how many of you were at the Seventh Haven dedication just a couple of weeks ago and froze your feet off? Yeah, quite a few of us. So Seventh Haven wouldn't have been possible without the commitment of Peninsula Housing Authority, which has put housing vouchers toward that and has helped make it a doable project. Huge lift for Ole Cap. Audrey, that was a big job. And I so love watching that the two of you did that kind of collaboration. What's another one, Judy?
Well, back in 2007, I approached Peter von Christiersen about whether we could have a community garden on 5 city lots that he owns in my neighborhood. And he said, well, yes, but it's dedicated for affordable housing, so it's time limited. How much time? How about 7 years? I go, great. And then a couple years later, he said, how about 5 years? And I'm like, great. And then after that, we said, could we plant asparagus? And he said, go ahead. I'm not ready to donate it yet. He wanted to donate it to what was then called Homeward Bound, but he didn't necessarily feel the board was strong enough to pass it over yet. So flash forward 15 years. The garden's been there for 15 years. And he came to me last summer and he said, it's time. So last summer, we started talking with Olympic Housing Trust, which is represented by Kellen Lynch. And I don't believe you were in those conversations, but he is a member of the garden. Jesse Thomas and Justine Gonzalez-Berg came to the conversations involving what we called the new garden team, because in order to have the housing there, we had to move the garden a couple of lots to the east. So the collaboration not only involved Olympic Housing Trust and the community garden and the donor of the land, but it also involved two other people. One was Richard Tucker from Jefferson Land Trust, because he was offering to help with legal assistance putting deed restrictions on the land for the garden, so the garden would stay a garden and the housing would stay housing. And it also involved collaboration with the food bank growers, because the garden was going to become a food bank dedicated garden, because we donate all the time to the food bank. So we had this major collaboration going on between four different organizations and the landowner, and we're getting a lot closer to culminating that deal. And the third one is Jamie's to share.
A third one happened really recently when some people from Community Build, Debbie and Anna Lee, came and sat down with Catherine and myself at Habitat, and we started talking about what they were doing, because they're rock-starring volunteer work. There's a lot of volunteers happening. And they said, you know, we're going to hit a stage really soon where our volunteers aren't doing something, and is there anything they can do? Well, Habitat is hitting a place with the six homes on Landis Street where we really need volunteers right now. So it's just this lovely little collaboration that we could help provide a place and keep some volunteers going while they wouldn't lose volunteers until their next project started. So thanks to Community Build for doing that. We're going to do a round robin of who's here. I'll start it just and say I'm Jamie Maciejewski. I'm the executive director at Habitat for Humanity. I've been there since 2007. And we do home ownership with our homeowner partners helping to build their homes.
My name is Kellen Lynch. I work with the Olympic Housing Trust doing outreach and fundraising. And we are a community land trust here in Jefferson and Clallam County. And we work to provide permanently affordable housing for folks to own now and into the future. Grew up here in Port Townsend. I played snare drum right behind you here and care about housing because I want to live here. I want my friends to live here. We're not going to have a community unless we create permanently affordable housing. So happy to be in the circle.
I'm David Faber, mayor of the city of Port Townsend. As Kellen was alluding to, you know, a lot of friends growing up here who couldn't find a place to live, had to move away, or continuously under threat of having to leave this community, and want to make sure that doesn't have to be the way. The city's also purchased and working on developing the infrastructure for Evans Vista, which is a large parcel just next to the first roundabout on Sims Way, right at the edge of town. Currently targeting 100 units of workforce housing, which is affordable for between 80 and 120% area median income, and then 50 units of affordable housing below 80% area median income. I'm looking to hopefully find ways to get even more out of that land. We'll see what we can do. We're still in that planning process, so there's still a lot of opportunities, and I'm hoping that's a great collaboration opportunity between the city and many of the people around here and many of the people out in the broader community. So that's a really exciting project, and hopefully not the last one that the city is going to be seriously engaged in. So really excited to be part of this group.
Good afternoon. My name is Sarah Martinez. I'm the executive director of the Peninsula Housing Authority. We serve Jefferson and Clallam counties out here on the North Olympic Peninsula. As a public housing authority, we administer federal low and affordable housing programs, many that you're probably familiar with, and the most you're familiar with is probably Section 8 housing. But we also own several properties in Clallam County and consider ourselves to be one of the largest housing developers on the North Olympic Peninsula. Over the last 10 years, we've developed about an additional 100 units in Clallam County. We hope that we can get over to Jefferson to start doing some multifamily housing development. Have really enjoyed our collaboration with OLECAP over the last several years with Seventh Haven, and getting subsidies into that project was a huge thing for them and also for us. I fundamentally believe that housing is necessary for everyone and work to that end within my organization.
I'm Eva Holm. I'm part of a forming co-housing group called Newt Crossing, right outside of town, just a few miles outside of Port Townsend. People in Port Townsend are probably familiar with co-housing because of Quimper Village and Rosewind in town. We're hoping to be a bit smaller than either of those, but more rural. And co-housing is a way for people to live together and share a lot more than we're used to sharing in this culture. A common house, common meals, often a common garden, whatever other common things people decide to have in that community. As far as being affordable, this is something that co-housing communities struggle with because it is development, it is developing real estate usually from the ground up. So it's something that I'm here hopefully to learn about. I think there's ways that we can get creative by working together. So I'm hoping to learn some ways. I mean, there's economies of scale, but I think we can get more creative than that.
Hi, I'm Jane Armstrong, and I'm a volunteer on the steering committee and the Housing Connections Group with the Housing Solutions Network. Our group has come together in the last several years to really bring a focus to affordability of housing for middle-income people who work in our communities in East Jefferson County. And a lot of that initially had been about education and awareness and raising voices to a challenge that we all know exists locally. We know we have some wonderful housing providers and services working in different elements of this, and we're looking to help bring resources and people together to find their voice, their talents, and their connections to people to come up with creative solutions and connections that are going to help projects like Evans Vista and Mason Street on a large level, but neighborhood projects and in our own home projects come about that'll provide housing for people that aren't often served by services, but are as essential a part of our community for all of us in having a broad community to work and live with here.
My name is Julia Cochran. I am the founder and executive director of the Winter Welcoming Center. I'm also here representing Coast because they're in another role here today. We deal with the unsheltered and the sheltered. This year, the Winter Welcoming Center, which is open 5 months out of the year, 4 to 8 hours a day, depending on the weather, saw a 75% increase in individuals. And those individuals, the increase is the unsheltered, because the sheltered's a pretty stable number. I'm seeing more and more people who look just like me and have the same level of mental health and substance abuse problems as I do. And it is a huge growing part of the population is older women on Social Security, on fixed incomes, who are being disowned from housing they've been in for decades, some of them.
My name is Abby Little. I'm representing the Real Estate Professionals for Affordable Housing. We're kind of a quiet nonprofit that works in the background, mostly doing small home repairs for homeowners so that they can stay in their homes and to protect that affordable housing stock. We do a lot of collaboration with OLECAP, with Habitat, with Boeing Bluebills, ECO. So we typically have a budget of $5,000 per project. So we're doing a lot of things like hot water heater repairs, ramps, grab rails for seniors as they come home. We do have a lot of roofs and septic systems coming through, which obviously aren't something that we can do on our own with that budget. So that's something that we collaborate with other organizations on. I also grew up in the area. Unfortunately, I'm a tad bit older, so I didn't go to school in this building. But born and raised, my father was a part-time builder here. My parents had rentals as their retirement plan. So I grew up around that. I married into a builder family. I worked in the building industry here. So I've developed on my own. We have rentals, so I've kind of seen it from all sides. And it's just a passion of mine to be involved in housing, because what I've seen is it's always been kind of we're really on our own out here, a mom and pop kind of industry. And for me, it's just like one housing unit at a time, whatever we can do to contribute. So it's been so exciting to see some of these huge wins and bigger projects that we've had come online this year. And I'm just happy to contribute a little piece.
For those listeners just joining us, you're tuning in to a discussion that took place among 13 organizations that focus on community building and housing solutions at Port Townsend's very first connectivity fair.
Hi, I'm Audrey Morford. I work with Olympic Community Action Programs. I'm the Housing Department Operations Manager. And OLECAP also serves Jefferson and Clallam County, though most of our housing funding sources are for Jefferson only. So most of our housing work is in Jefferson County. We provide management and oversight for the Jefferson County Emergency Shelter, as well as Caswell Brown Village, kind of the hybrid outdoor shelter model. We have homeless prevention programs to help people with temporary rental assistance so they can avoid eviction and avoid becoming homeless. We also have rapid rehousing dollars, which help people who are experiencing homelessness get the money to move into housing if and when they can find a place, or we can help them find a place. And then we do have some other longer-term supportive housing services where we work with people over a period of time. And we do have a few properties where we also house people. Most of our services are for low-income individuals and families, but we do have some resources that we can put towards working with anyone who has a housing crisis of some kind. Happy to be here today.
Hi, I'm Jillian Kanagi, and I'm representing the Community Boat Project today. We're about to celebrate 30 years of doing youth programming in the community. We work with youth to build tiny homes, to help build construction skills. We also work with other volunteers in the community, and we have a number of great people we collaborate with, Bayside. A lot of generous donors allow us to do this work. Trying to teach people how to build, give them those skills, and then create homes that we can give back to the community. It's kind of a beautiful full circle creative process. So, you know, we're a small part of the solution, but if we can help train youth in the community to be able to have those construction skills, to stay in the community, to be able to maybe build their own home, to see that it's possible, any home counts, right?
I'm Heather Dudley Nolet. I'm from Bayside Housing and Services, and it's a pleasure to see you all here. Bayside provides transitional supportive housing and hotel, motel, and shelter, and has done that for about 7 years now. We've just purchased the Hadlock Motel as our fourth site. So we started at the Bayside Tower, which is adjacent to the old alcohol plant. We are a social enterprise model, so we have a for-profit and nonprofit partners. And that is one of our ongoing business plan components, is to continue to try to find a funding mix that brings in a revenue source that can actually provide some additional revenue for the nonprofit mission, in addition to donors and grant funding. So we did just win a grant to purchase the Hadlock Motel, and that's going to become our first permanent supportive housing. So we're really excited about that and are doing some of those renovations now, dropping in kitchenettes and cabinetry and those kinds of things that we'll need to make a more suitable permanent home. So those are 17 units. One is a 4-bedroom double wide, so we're excited to be able to house another family there. I'll just end by saying that we started about 7 years ago with 6 individuals, all elders, there at the Bayside Tower next to old alcohol plant. And we're now serving over 55 people, 13 children. And although we're thrilled to be able to serve that many people, we have over 80 people on our wait list, like Audrey does, and like all of you, I'm sure each of us are really representing a much larger part of our community that is waiting for housing. And so as much as we are driven to provide those supportive services, the case management is a key part of what Bayside does. We're also always looking for new projects. And so we've got several that we're looking at right now, as you all are. And we won't be able to stop doing this work for quite some time. So I'm really happy to be in partnership with all of you.
Thank you, Heather. I'm Judy Alexander, and I'm here now representing Community Build. I've been active within Community Build for 2.5 years now. Started with Jesse Thomas suggesting that we build shelters for the people that were utterly living in tents or totally homeless. It was during COVID. We got to build outside under a tent. We were all happy to be able to be together when everybody else was having to be isolated at home. We have, in that 2.5 years, built, almost completed 42 shelters, 8-by-12-foot shelters, not with bathrooms, not with kitchens in those shelters, but we partnered with the first two villages with Bayside. So we created housing at Peter's Place in Hadlock and Pat's Place in Port Townsend. And the third group of 12 shelters were built for Olicap and went to Caswell Brown. And there's another 12 or 10, I forget, 10, being built right now, very close to completion in front of the New Life Church. So Community Build has, as Jamie mentioned, a very wide range of willing volunteerism, and
I think part of our success had to do with when we started. Everybody was looking for ways to be engaged safely with other people when we were being told to stay distant. So we felt really lucky and grateful to be able to serve a very important need at the time when most people didn't know how to have that kind of connectivity in their lives. I will say that right now, Community Build is looking towards maybe pivoting to, and similar to Bayside, more permanent housing. We're thinking of trying to build small houses, 400 feet, maybe at some point get involved with creating some of the housing behind Chimicum Corner Store, if that happens down the road. So we're currently looking ahead. Like, I think a lot of the housing organizations know that temporary housing is great. It's necessary, but it's not the end of the story. Jamie, okay if we pivot to the next portion of this? Okay. Okay, so this is another quick, and this is like a few sentences from each of us, and I'll just show you what I mean. We want each person to say, of the organization that you're part of, what are two things that you do well associated with housing, and what is one thing that you need some sort of help or collaboration about? So Community Build does pretty good at building community. We've gotten the volunteers. We've engaged restaurants to feed us when we work. We also do a good job strategizing how to accomplish projects. What we need help with, two things I'm going to say, is what do we do for our future projects? And the second one is we get kind of attached to our villages, and we would like it if we could have more ongoing contact somehow. Not just build the houses, but somehow stay connected. So, Jamie, why don't you go with Habitats next?
I also wanted to frame it as two things we could offer or two things we do well. So the two things that I was thinking of that Habitat has to offer, one is that we have applications open now. We're accepting, we have 10 openings for homeownership. So we would love to pass the word. The second thing is with the property that we bought in Port Hadlock, the 17 acres, we have the possibility of partnering with nonprofits that could have land there to build. And so we're going to be entering a phase of talking about that. And that's something I feel like we could offer. The community was incredibly generous to make this property available. So that's a couple things. In terms of need, we are doing more and we need more volunteers. So group builds, one-time builds, anything, we could really use more volunteers and would love to make it possible for your group celebrate your birthday with your friends or have your employees come out together or whatever. Service clubs, sure. Yes. Thanks.
This is Kellen Lynch with Olympic Housing Trust. The Olympic Housing Trust is a distinct model as a community land trust, and I think that allows us to lean into our ability to generate really productive and unique partnerships. Just as Jamie was saying with Habitat, they're looking to partner with different organizations on that land. We too are looking to develop new partnerships with other nonprofits here, but not just nonprofits as well. There is an interesting opportunity that is manifesting in Chimicum with the Jefferson Land Trust in potentially developing housing out there specifically for farm workers down the line. And that would be something that would be very unique and special for us to lean into as an organization. Another strength of ours, and I would say maybe constraint, is the model that we use as a community land trust is new to a lot of people. However, it's been around for 60 years. It came out of the civil rights era and is an amazing, really kind of the medicine we need right now in order to counteract this illness of market rate housing that is taking over our society. So educating around the model of capping resale, making sure that folks can buy it now and in the future. That's a learning curve for a lot of us, but we can deliver that message. And I will say something we are looking for support on as a community land trust are members and memberships, because we have a representative board. We also have kind of a representative organization, and we want folks to know that they can be part of our organization as a member with a low $25 annual membership fee. So thanks so much.
All right, David Faber again, City of Port Townsend. Two things we do well, land use and zoning rules, and then infrastructure and funding. I mentioned Evans Vista before. We're putting millions into the ground there for sewer and water and streets and so forth to facilitate development there. Granting, such as fee deferrals for different local providers. We grant tens of thousands already, I think, maybe per year to Habitat at this point. And hopefully other organizations will be able to take advantage of that, as well as allocations from the Housing Fund Board, because the city partners with the county on that. And then also within that is our work with our state and federal delegations, where we've secured, again, millions of dollars for the community to do housing, affordable housing projects through the state and federal delegation. What we need help with, local agencies and people in the community to take advantage of the opportunities that we're trying to create here. That's where the city is not as good at doing that as many of the people around the circle are.
This is Sarah Martinez with the Housing Authority. A couple of things that the PHA does well. I think we manage our limited resources very well. Our funding is often siloed, is the term I like to use, because we receive grants and other federal funding sources that can only specifically be used for certain programs, and we do a tremendous job in keeping those programs funded and continuing in communities. I think another thing that our agency does really well is the clients that we're serving. We serve very well. We have a lot of care for our clients. We take exceptional care of our housing that we own, oftentimes even better than private landlords are able to do with certain multifamily buildings. And so I feel that that's something that we've really risen to the occasion on in being an affordable or a low-income landlord, is a lot of our projects don't look like they fit that mold. And something that I would say we need assistance with specifically from this community, Jefferson County, is we need more individuals who own rentals to be willing to be Section 8 landlords. We have a significant wait list. We have people out shopping. And while I realize that oftentimes rentals are potentially someone's form of income, just thinking about serving somebody that might be at or below 50% of AMI helps somebody else out and still gets your rent paid.
I'm Eva Holm with Newt Crossing Community. I guess two things that we do well are that sense of community. Somebody else mentioned every Sunday we have people coming up and working in the garden, even though they don't live there yet. Governance, we've all gotten ourselves trained in sociocracy, facilitation. And what we could really use help with is knowing how to develop co-housing communities that are affordable. Because no matter how small we design our homes and how much we choose our building materials to be affordable, there are those certain fixed costs that are just really hard to get away from.
Jane Armstrong with Housing Solutions Network. I think we've done a really good job of educating and making people aware of the dynamics of the housing crisis locally and how broad it is and how many people are affected. Where we could use some help is we have one staff. We don't build housing. Our power is in the voices of the community and bringing people together around common cause and work together and finding solutions. And given that the environment's changed so much since COVID and interest rates and building costs, the ability to tap into people who are affected by the housing crisis, who work here, who are employers here, who are engaged community members, and come up with what are today's solutions, looking at what do you need, how is it going to look, what can you afford. We need those voices coming together more, and we need to fill out our steering committee more broadly to represent those groups in this community, to give the leadership so that there is a place for those conversations.
You've been listening to a discussion that took place among 13 organizations that focus on community building and housing solutions at Port Townsend's very first connectivity fair on April 16th. We look forward to meeting again for the part two conclusion of this stimulating discussion. This is Chris Bricker, and thank you for listening.